You know, and even just the subtle changing of a word can change it from being snookered into polarity into an effective invitational spiral. You know, speak truth to power, see, I think is still like, we are noble and you're going to crush us, but we're more noble than you, now we're dead. If you just change one word, right, rather than speak truth to power, which is still kind of like unworked out issues with daddy, speak truth, be power, right? Then we got an ancient thing going on, and it's magnetic, you know. Speak truth, be power, you know. Just reminding again the trickster liberator and wonderful learned druid John Michael Greer, who says, if you want people to get nothing done but conflict, convince them they're on one side of something, right? And you will only get heat and conflict, and space bugs will love it. So that's so crucial for us now with all the protests, people grabbing their balls out there on the street. And again, the brilliant reframing that happens at Standing Rock to not using the word protester anymore, protector. We go, oh, that's brilliant. It's true. You know, protectors, you know, the police came out against protectors, you know. It's just, again, already, you know, we're it's truer, it's more authentic, it's it's more invitational. It's more magic, and it already forms a collaborative alliance. You know, we are protecting water; water is protecting us. Again, whatever we love loves us. Whatever we love loves us and wants us to be its storyteller. You know, for it. So what John Michael Greer says is, you know, two conflict. What two needs is three, which is the unifying story. Come on in. You know, we're all in this dream together. We've all been snookered. We, you know, may everyone. Not may you, may everyone, may we do this, may we do that. It's just part of our it's truer, you know, because Neptune says we are all in this dream together, you know, and we're all part of each other. And it becomes also an effective magical realm, wonderful dream coach that I worked with, Donna Graham, wherever you are, many ways to work with dreams. But she would do this genius thing in which, in our little group, somebody would tell their dream. Nobody else could interpret it. And then she would guide each person to tell the dream, their dream, in a way in which everything in the dream was them. Right? And it's just really interesting because you could see, even if you were an outside witness and you couldn't quite tell the details, you could see somebody arriving at their own autonomous revelation, going, whoa. And that's part of the conflict or the cauldron of now. You know, everything into the cauldron going, does it guide people to their own autonomy? Is the trickster welcome? Can the truth be said without fear? Is it equal Mars and Venus, men and women? Is it equal humans and the rest of creatures on this planet? Yes, we ladle it out. No, we throw it back in for another round of bubbling. Because see, all spiritual traditions, I mean, everything wants to be bubbled now, according to what is it we need now. And the piece of the puzzle I always carry with the brokering deals backstage with animals and rocks and plants is my friend Robinette Kennedy. She of the spicy phrase, what if the idea of matriarchy is a patriarchal concept? as opposed to actual equality. She lives in Crete and we've spent time in Malta. You know, and she goes, it's equality. It looks like matriarchy because things are so whacked out now. But she said, you know, the modern concept of worship has become so colonized, really. You know, you are great, I am nothing, now give me this thing. And she said in hunter-gatherer society, you know, there was great reverence, and throughout the Mediterranean, great reverence and respect between the invisible backstage and the incarnate sensual onstage. But she said, but it was a much more collaborative relationship. The invisible seeks incarnational invitation as much as we seek communion with it. And I go, oh, I love this. Okay, democratic animism. As long as we have a hierarchical thing, I mean, we can have respect and people know more and know less. And I mean, all of that is important. And people we admire, we want to be more like them. You know, but as long as we have a hierarchical kind of a thing of outsourcing our autonomy, we're going to end up with, well, what we have. that's right. So the outsourcing. Yeah, not being snookered into polarity. And so Neptune stationing November 19th, all around then. I mean, we're not fixating, we're not fetishizing, you know, a particular date. But it says right now, you know, Neptune is stationing, and it says, you know, you never know. Nothing is fixed. You know, nothing is certain. In fact, certainty is a booby prize. You know, and that's why, again, the quality of flexible and many stories and how things could go, because it is, in fact, that way. And as we're convening right now, Neptune Dreams and Vision is pretty much way out there, but straight up overhead, conjoining what's called the south node of the moon, where the moon crosses the sun's path. That arrangement is like saying, for many of us who know the Fool card, card zero, all the power that ever was or will be is here now. It says to each one of us in our little fool's bindle staff, our little staff with our little knapsack of necessities and our companion dog and our circle of time that encompasses the universe around our skirts and everything. So we all have, you know, Neptune and Pisces in our little bindle staff, which is everything that has ever moved humans to conscious kinship. Every piece of music, every piece of poetry, every spiritual practice, everything. You know, each one of us, by our own customized affinity, you know, as though backstage nature had been saying, we're going to have to either kill the humans or heal them. Let's try healing them first. Let's play to their beautiful strong suit of symbolism and mythology and dreams and all the mythic figures. You know, all the guiding myths, Western, Eastern, I mean, everything, are all in this, you know, around this little circle of firelight. You know, all the myths that never ended, but they got put on pause, and we want to hit play, right? Because remember the Grail legend and the Arthurian legends, it was the round table comprised of shining, radiant individuals. You know, King Arthur born on the winter solstice, we're heading to a very powerful winter solstice. It's the birth of the Redeemer, not external, in each person's heart. You know, and the dynamic was the Grail legend and the Arthurian legends was an experiment of having spiritual people, magic spiritual people, involved in governance. That's what it was for, in order to protect. And what passes for the end of the Grail legend is all the hip spiritual magic people go away. Merlin goes off with the nymph, you know, into the woods. Arthur goes to go take Pilates classes with the priestesses in Avalon, you know, to await the world's call at a time of danger, you know, to call back the positive yang, to dance with the positive yin. And we go, now would be really good. Well, this winter solstice has got a lot of potency to it. You know, it was always the beseeching, the yearning for the redemptive thing to return. We go, You know, so for 25,000 years, people have, you know, honored these powerful dates because to deliberately honor and celebrate change of season stirs the creative powers of the psyche. So in that way, this is, you know, a wild field that we're moving into that I want around this solstice all brewing into place now that I want to make available for each one of our willingness and imagination. You know, what would we like? Again, not counting, not expecting, but wondering and inviting. You know, so come on back, you know, King Arthur, come on. It's also said, you know, High John the Conqueror doesn't die. He goes to go live in High John the Conqueror route. The same thing, to be invited back at a time. We go, now is really that. And it is the experiment of, you know, whatever word we want to use. I mean, spiritual is almost too tired. We might want to throw it into the cauldron. animistically kinned, whatever. Again, we want a fountain, you know, wonderful deep ocean scientist, Rick Gallo, whom I met at a TEDx conference after the beginning of the Gulf Cataclysm, where all the world's leading deep ocean scientists were gathered. And it's like a tarot card, because all the scientists were weeping, right? They could not maintain the imprisoning facade of disinterest anymore, because they knew how tragic it was. But Rick Gallo was a really great radio guest, and he said, he took us to the bottom of the sea, and he said it's more fertile there than any rainforest. There's waterfalls and lakes and incredible things, and yes, we humans have mucked it up, but never forget, at the very bottom of the sea, there are these vents of biogenesis, just blowing new life into the world. Just so we want linguistic and metaphoric biogenesis. You know, shape-shifting, new, unexpected, all of that. You know, and again, we don't have to source it. We get to invite it. You know, and invite in, you know, it's like making a deal. You know, I really love you, water. I love you, wolves. I love you, coyotes. I love you, this quality of thing. I love you, you know, fierce women under oppression. I mean, whatever that is, you know, come on in with these qualities that we can brew as a dynamic leadership. I am aspiring to give up, you know, any finger wagging to people about language and overuse of the word fight. Okay. Because the word fight, you know, we use it a lot, fight for justice, fight for this, fight global climate change, fight the Dakota thing. And it's like, it's okay, you know, but it wants to be part of a much larger vocabulary. Because when we use the word fight, our brains are symbolic. It sends hot cascade of that, you know, in an already too hot world. So there are many people who just, they love the word fight, and we're going to fight global warming, and I just go, no, okay, I don't want to finger wag, you know, but just suggest other things. You know, it's challenging, but for all of us to come up with, you know, it's true, people in public can't say we're going to dance, you know, but we'd like that, you know, and we're not really going to fight climate change. We're going to engage the humble ingenuity of humans to cooperate with nature's guiding genius. It's long. It's a long phrase, but we can all work together to shorten the thing up. You know, and it's like, you know, how long will we have war? And part of me goes, as long as we keep using it as a bleeping metaphor, the war on this, the war on that, the hot thing, the whatever, it's hot. You know, and we wonder about our species, you know, what is unique to us aside from our bad manners, which is pretty unique. Because in nature, even predators, you know, have manners, as Michael Gruber got his doctorate in predator-prey relations, meeting with another guest, and they were bonding on the air. They both had their doctorate in predator-prey relations. They're like, what are the chances? That's good. And it relaxed them, really. They're like, oh, I'm with somebody who knows. But what they said is, you know, even in nature, you know, there's these manners between predator and prey. And they said, you know, a prairie dog, if it's pretty close to its little hole and there's a hawk overhead, the prairie dog will kind of wiggle its eyebrows in some universally understandable to hawk language, going, don't even, look, my home right there, don't waste your energy. And the hawk goes, thank you, I'll eat you later. There we go. Okay. So... We've forgotten all that, but humans, you know, it might be that part of our opportunity and responsibility is to borrow qualities of intelligence from the flora and fauna, from the plants and animals, you know, of this nature, to weave our trickster cloak together, to, you know, engage in, you know, contracts, experimental contracts. If, you know, and that's also all coyotes. I mean, I know coyotes. I've lived with a half coyote longer than I've lived with a human. It's all telepathic negotiation. I mean, dogs know shame, going, oh, coyotes, no. You know, but it's all, I give you this, you give me that, no. How about this and that? Maybe, okay, how about that? You know, I give you this, you give me the other glove back? Maybe, okay. So it's all negotiation, and it works, and a lot of it's backstage, and a lot of it's telepathic, because animals see what we see. You know, and I learn a lot from the dog whisperer. I know people are like dog whisperer, but really a lot, because the hybrid wolf I had and the coyote dog were very aggressive. The moon dog actually took a jogger down once. Oops, very sorry, jogger. Okay, let's go home. But so they would be very aggressive, and so when I saw another dog coming, I would pull them over to one side, and they go, you know. You know, and the dog whisperer said, avoid nothing, never avoid. You know, and also, you know, dogs see what we see, right? So we saw another dog coming, and they saw in my mind, like, oh, we're supposed to go, because that's what she's seeing. You know, and so the dog whisperer said, no, you just set a magnetic field. You're going right through. There's a bunch of dogs. You're going right through. And that's the magnetic field. And it's like, it worked. It was like, wow, that was impressive. The aggressive dogs were, they do just want, you know, the magnetic field and the communication, and so it is with everything. Yes, yeah, so we're throwing many things into the cauldron. Anybody read in the 60s or 70s the Illuminatus trilogy by Robert Anton Wilson? Yeah, like, so many useful things. Who brought what we want to remember? One of the many witty things there was a word that we were all conditioned to hear, but not know that we'd heard, and that when we heard it, without knowing that we'd heard it, it would create a state of confused, paralytic anxiety. And Fenord, right, the word's Fenord. So the news people would go, good evening, Fenord. And we wouldn't hear Fenord, but we go, oh God, I feel like hell. And there's the Fenord thing. I love, you know, in Terry Pratchett's beautiful novel, the last one he wrote when he was dying, which is The Shepherd's Crown, beautiful. But there's great badness entering the world into the kind of its humble shire, you know, and in this case, the Fairy Queen was part of the bad thing, but she changed sides, right? Okay, people change, spiral into other things according to how we meet them. Unusual alliances can happen, and, you know, to have the innocent dignity of child heart, again, as David Grimes says, you know, savvy, you know, and protected, but will it woof woof want to play? You know, if we're moving our emotional default setting to woof woof want to play, you know, if somebody doesn't, we keep going. Right? If we mind, then it wasn't really an offering of play. It was like, so the fairy queen changes sides and she goes, you witches, you have no idea what you're up against. And they're like, we're witches. We're up for anything. And the fairy queen says, oh, but you have no idea about glamour. Glamour, you know, and they're like, sure, you know. Now it is trippy that the word glamour is a Scottish word that means, you know, men's fear of women projected onto the dark sorceress who lures men to their deaths, you know. And we call magazines it, you know, and just as a kind of useful thing, we go. I was the little things, the large things. Part of me was also like, oh, Michelle Obama's vegetable garden. Oh my God. Oh my God, you know, hope it's not a helicopter landing pad. And then I go, no, let's just, you know, have liberating whimsy out there that Melania throws off her burqa of glamour and puts on gardening gloves and goes, and we go, we're just leaving room. We're just leaving. Hey, who's a good Melania? Yes, you are. There you are. Who's a good gardener? Who's a good gardener who loves plants more than dingbats? So there you go. There you go. So the fairy queen says to the witches, and the witches are like, well, glamour has no hold on us, you know. And the fairy queen says, let me give you just a little dose. And each one of the witches goes, right, it's sort of like a Ring of Power moment, but if I had the Ring of Power, it would be fantastic, and I am the most beloved of mythological huzza-huzzas, and I am one of the 144 great priestess dingbats in the world. And then they go, oh, no, but I'm nothing, I've been a fraud. And they go, wow, that was really strong. So they are taught this chant, Yon Ton Tethera, which dispels false glamour, you know, dissipates it for oneself and for everybody around, right? And that's really important, you know. Just together we might go, Yon Ton Tethera, Yon Ton Tethera, Yon Ton Tethera. All right, that's good. Okay. So useful when watching TV, Yon Ton Tethera, to demagnetize, you know, the glamour. So when I stepped out of Philadelphia, good individual play, mob mind in the thing, and I did step out and under the sky going, whoa, we're really up against stuff. You know, this is really, really dangerous. And I did think, you know, only Bernie can save us because he's in the conversation. He's the real deal. I mean, he's in that conversation that Trump is hoovering, right? And that's why it was such a perfect symmetry, you know, of the con man and the liberating trickster. You know, part of the team, Bernie had his sails up to catch that wind. And I was like, oh, but that's apparently not to be. And I thought about, you know, in World War II when England funded not only Bletchley Park, but the British government funded the witches and wizards to come together to weave a spell of protection over England to protect it from the Nazi invasion. And I go, I think it's like that now. That's what I thought, you know, and I guess it was August after the convention, or July. And it was like, oh, we need everybody. We need everybody, you know, like Terry Pratchett, to dissolve the false glamour, to demagnetize, going, snap out of it, snap out of it. But again, the invitation was so strong, and it's like, and Hillary, I mean, I was, you know, squinting back into, all right, I can work with this, but she had no story, and so I was worried also too, because. You know, going, oh, it would be a better, you know, we're trying to work with you. But her whole thing was like, and Trump is bad, and the thing is, and it's like, where's your story? Story and language. And I got to say also, just, you know, from the Jill Stein kind of realm, I didn't exactly hang out with her, but I was this close to her. I was close enough to get elbowed out of the way by her going, I'm a boy out of my way. So. But I go, you know, no, all candidates were befoibled. And a friend of mine says, you know, politicians are designed to be disappointing so that we don't outsource our authority. And she also, you know, kind of yelling wanly, like, we are the ones we've been waiting for. And I go, so I just, yes, I'm sorry, but the jolting, I can't help myself. But she didn't have story really either. You know, I remember tapping in after the third debate, you know, to Democracy Now! And stuff, and there were people bringing things forward that had been excluded. What about Haiti? What about Black Lives? What about the Earth? You know, and then they were like, and let's interview Jill Stein and ask her about all these questions. And she said, well, there was absolutely no vision there, and it was just this kind of nitpicking, and let me proceed to have no vision and just go, nya, 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 nya. I go, right. So no one was perfect, you know, and no one was quite up to the storytelling task. I thought Bernie actually really was, because one of the things that Bernie did and does, and we want to see him, that part of our dream, you know, kind of doing that, is, you know, we all have our magic mirror, also something under your seats you can take away in your invisible backpack. And it's the secular critic part of all of us, you know, holds up a mirror and goes, whew, you know, it sucks in detail, whoa, which is important. And then with a wave of the hand, our trickster selves, you know, turn the mirror into a window, but look how beautiful it could be. And then with another wave of the hand, turns it into a door. Let's all go there. Let's all go there. And Bernie was pretty great at mirror, window, door. Here's how it, and see, that's the thing about the Bernie-Trump dynamic, is they were both saying, here's how you're being snookered. And that's how I approach people in Cleveland, going, how am I going to talk to these right-wing Trump supporters? And I go, well, let's step into the middle of the story and go, everyone wants to know how they're being snookered, right? Yeah, and I go, all right, we got an agreement. Let's start to back out from that. And Trump was like, you're being snookered, and it's by those people, by those people, by those people. Very dangerous. And Bernie was like, here's how we're being snookered, and here's what we're all going to be doing. So that was not to be. You know, and there's many assignments. We go, all right. And many things about could he have won, and we go, regret, remorse is useful, regret completely useless. And so here we are, you know, may we all, you know, dree our weird, which is this great Celtic phrase, to play our role in destiny. And always, you know, kind of crafting myself, because I used to say all war is a failure of imagination, which was useful. But then I go, well, where's the counterpoint blessing, Caroline? I go, right, okay. If all war is a failure of imagination, then all peace is a triumph of imagination. And then there we go. There we've got we've got the complete dynamic. So this mesmeric trance of directing atmospheric traffic, and I guess just a little bit of expanded compassion. You know, part of the dynamic of now was Neptune dreams vision and idealism, you know, encounters Saturn structure. Can be interpreted on many, many levels. But what happens when idealism meets the prison of elected office, or, you know, the reality circumstance, or, you know, implementing? What happens with that? And I would wish for us all expanded complexity of perspective, not even to change our opinions, but to have an expanded, more informed, like, in order to be more effective magicians and wizards and witches and animists and all. And I do love the TV series, Danish, called Borgen, B-O-R-G-E-N. It's not magic, but it is really great. Are you nodding your head in the third row? Because you, great, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is, because it's exactly about that. It's about what happens to ideals when you're elected the first woman prime minister of Denmark, which is in the show, which is fiction. And then after that, they did elect the first woman prime minister. Again, imagination lays the tracks. But it's like, what happens? And just to kind of ride through that going, okay, it's more difficult, more complex than one thought, not to ever let the ideals go, but to expand one's understanding about what people are up against. And that's also a kind of expanded wisdom and tolerance, you know, because how have we all been complicitous? Complicity is a wonderful word, and acknowledgement, not shame, not blame, but whatever's going on, we are contributing creative chi to it. How have we all been, how are we all complicitous in this? And again, some composting may want to happen. Because even among the team of good-hearted people, it's sort of like the Baptist joke of somebody walking along a cliff and encounters another person, goes, oh, Southern male, yeah, Christian, Baptist, second denomination of the Reformed Church. Die, heathen! You know, it's Alison Laurie's wonderful quote, too. The reason academic politics is so vicious is because the stakes are so small. Right? And, among left-wing groups and, green in the Pacific, and it's like, team, and a little bit of respect. Respect, a wonderful word, it means to look at again, re is again, spect, look. For teammates in which one goes, my voting decision is this way and yours is that way, but I understand we have a shared vision of the desirable future, and I do not agree with you, but I honor your right to have a distinctive strategy, rather than tantrum yoga, which is a snookering again into, tyrannical subservience to the reality police, And so right now, as we head into the hot atmosphere and protests, which are truly people grabbing their balls on the streets, again, how to be agents of cool and calm, and there was a little bit of that in Philadelphia and Cleveland, kind of warming up, like. Who was really good at spiraling peace into the dynamic? Again, Unexpected was great. I had a good time and a more challenging time with Vermin Supreme, but he's a satirical character that I've known of since 2000 who runs for president. And in Cleveland, he was a genius. In Philadelphia, we got into trouble and were escorted out. But the reason where he was a genius, there was a great article about, because of this, because of this clown, there was no violence in Cleveland, seriously. And in a part of his skill set, just for all of us to play with, so protesters, or protectors, okay, done, bicycle police on both sides, and he goes, that's the crucial moment, right? You got to disrupt fear right then, because fear always plays into tyranny. And so he grabs the bullhorn, and he says to the police, remember to do it like we rehearsed it, boys, right? Which is already like... you're disrupting the narrative, like whoa, and it's that crucial disruption, that is part of our skill set. And then he, with the bullhorn, he's like, oh, the police over here, your bicycles aren't even. You're not doing a very good job. This team, they're doing much better. They're doing much better over there. And they were like, oh. now there's schoolboys not doing well, and like we've got a different thing kind of going on, and then at a slightly different thing, but the same kind of tension. He gets the crowd to chant, "Give the cops a raise, give the cops a raise," and they're like, "Whoa, And then the Westboro Baptist Church was there going, you're all sodomites and heathens and drug addicts. And Vermin steps up and goes, those are my voters, right? And it cracks the police up. They really kind of like him there. We got into not so good later, but anyway. But so that was very effective. I will actually bring in where it didn't go so well is that in so I was going to have him as my radio guest in Philadelphia. And the deal is what we've done everywhere. You go out and you kind of discreetly take passes and you escort your radio guest back through security and all that kind of thing, back into the radio thing. And I didn't notice actually until the photographs afterwards that Vermin had dressed up in the way to absolutely not get in. He'd put a fake butt on. I just like, I didn't see that. And he's always wearing a boot on his head. So I walk up, his film guy says, you have a pass for me, right? And I immediately was like, no. And then they're like, oh, but you said you, and it's like, okay. Because he did look like, screw you, Occupy Central Casting. Like, and it's like, oh, well, sure, okay, let's give it a try. All right, so we're going through, and the cops are like, no. Secret Service has to come and get on the phone, and it's like 5 minutes to live radio. And he goes, no, it's the DNC's party. We obey them, says the Secret Service, and they're gonna take credentials, and take your credentials. I'm like, no, not my credentials. But then always trickster remembering autonomy, going, all right, okay. And so we did do the show live, on a cell phone in the rain under an umbrella during Fun Drive. I don't know if you caught that show, but it's like, here I am, no notes, and it's Vermin Supreme. We just got kicked out and decredentialed, but we're trying to raise money anyway. Okay. So it's like extremely live radio. But what was important for our craft is that, you know, when we're waiting there, you know, Vermin is doing his pranks, right? But they're not working because he's angry. Right, and it is a kind of lesson. I don't think he'll. I mean, I think we sort of have understood this backstage, because he didn't have his Harumphatude composter. So he's like, you know, these pranks, and part of me is like, I'm in somebody else's movie, and when can I leave? No, but I'm really locked in. I'm really locked into somebody else's movie, and it's not going well. And you can see that he's then magnetizing the opposition, and I am complicitous also, because they're perfectly good. But lessons about how the same thing can work or not work according to our inner authenticity, yeah. Right? And so it's, you can't be a trickster with a hierarchical, harumphatudinous, oppositional attitude, you will get then decredentialed and led to prison, possibly. You know, and also, you know, out there in the streets, when there was a lot of... There was Free Hugs Ken, who's this great, radiant, authentic black guy, who really does have people melt in his arms, cops and angry protesters, because he's really real. Right. You. This is, you know, again, the authenticity, the trickster who is authentic is liberating, and really quite irresistible, you know. And everybody kind of wants that because he did. He was like who's a poor little cop? This is, and you don't want to do those bad things. No, I don't. Okay. Yeah. So again, may we be agents of cooling out. You know, as I say, you know, please don't feed the Dementors. You know, don't because again, and so when I had to go back and get my stuff, but I had my, actually it was very cute because somebody smuggled me a pass. I got decredentialed, you know, to get back in. And so I do the pass and I go through two layers of security, and then the Secret Service guys just says, Ma'am, you're the most colorful person here. There's just, you can't smuggle through. But here, I'll get you your own Secret Service guy, and you can go pick up you. I had my own Secret Service guy, my own DNC guy to escort me, you know, into whatever. And Pacifica, that our team in Philadelphia had been sort of taken over by space bugs and was not fun or collaborative, and you know, was very disrespectful to almost everybody. But now that I'm being escorted back by the police, suddenly I'm a folk hero, right? It's like, oh, she's worked for us for so long. We didn't know her name before, but now. It's like, okay, and now I'm a folk hero for the wrong reasons too, but what the hell. So then the DNC guy really is a space bugs guy, like zero affect, and he peels off, and I've got my own Secret Service guy. And I go, and he goes, DNC, pretty thin-skinned, he says. And I go, yeah, you know, they're really policing the story narrative, like, very not playful atmosphere in Philadelphia at all, story narratives and vituperative and all of that, in which, you know, we're all complicitous in a way, you know, and then we're having a companionable time, Secret Service guy, and I said I resist the word elder, I'm willing to be a maven, and I said that I did, but for a lot of these people on the streets, this is their first rodeo. And so I said, sometimes I feel like shaking my cane, going, because there was no violence, but the people on the streets were spitting in the face of the police, and you know, and just yelling, you know, lock her up. They were, you know, our team was like, lock her up, you know, shut it down, you know, very polar, you know. And I said, yeah, they haven't integrated peacefulness into their strategy, but there are some really great peaceful people here working on the streets. And he goes, not in the front three rows. And I go, you're right, not in the, because in the front three rows, including Miss Stein, you know, people we go, right, okay, so now we're going back to the drawing board. But to treat a colonial person with colonial condescension is colonial. Right, so it's like we're really going into, you know, authenticity, and so that's why, you know, into the cauldron to be able to waft forth as storytellers, you know, this night and in perpetuity, you know, with experimentally throwing you into the cauldron, ladling out we're dreaming this whole thing together, we're all complicitous, we've all been snookered. It's just a good experiment, because it's not. It's the unifying story, rather than the polar thing.
You.
It's also, you know, like throwing into the cauldron. Well, we love words, right? Because the word privilege means private law. That's what it means etymologically. And you go, right, of course. You know, so we throw that into the cauldron. And along with it, just, I think, some metaphors. Like, drain the swamp into the metaphor, right? into the cauldron. You know, what a terrible metaphor. That's what Saddam Hussein did to the Marsh Arabs in Iraq. Drain the swamp. Drain it of all life. It's like, no, we don't want to drain the swamp.
Protect the wetlands.
That's right. We want the swamp teeming with, you know, spirit alligators and things that, you know, eat ego. I would invite all of our team also to throw in the metaphor of holding feet to fire, because that is torture, you know? It's like, no, we're going to sit around the fire and give somebody s'mores, you know? Again, it's a shape-shifting, but the metaphors are really crucial. And so many people are like, you know, well, you know, Clinton would have been a wolf in sheep's clothing. And I go, first, no dissing wolves. Or sheep, the last little bit that we all know. I mean, they're 9/11, 11/9, right? And when we can get freaked out when we're not alone, you know, just even listening to the news coming over here, I'm going, right, 9/11, 11/9. There is a symmetry. It's like this is the ratcheted up, much more effective continuation of what happened on 9/11. You know, it's like, whoa, you know, these guys are ready. It's like, you know, it's like Eddie Izzard says, you know, what does evil schedule look like? Death, 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 tea, death, death, lunch, death. We can hardly get down to the gym. You know, I mean, these guys are very prepared, you know. You know, again, you know, Trump is their, you know, well, I like the model of possession. Because also when I stepped out of Philadelphia and was like, oh my God, you know, witches and wizards come together, everything, we got to dissolve this, come in, Tiffany Aiken. And I really did feel that the most apt metaphor is that Trump is possessed by a cunning, demonic retrovirus. And I knew about the agility of being able to sucker up people's hopes, you know, and kind of a gargantuan, vulgar, murderous, sociopathic, monstrous example of multi-level marketing. Because he was like, no, I have to, you know, step right up and, you know, sign up 8 people and I will, you know, I will bring you the deepest change you've always dreamed of since you were a child. I'm like, oh man, space bugs, wow, they want this thing. They're so hungry for that quality of magic, and this is the toxic thing, right? So again, it behooves us to do the authentic thing. There is a November 9th, 1938 is Kristallnacht, right? There is a resonance that is not too extreme to understand. So November 9th, 1938 is Kristallnacht when the Nazis very cunningly engineer this massive mob to burn down synagogues and everything. And the Nazi party, 61% of the Nazi party, did not approve of this, going, no burning down synagogue. Didn't matter, you know. And we go, all right, now the difference is, and this is so what was so kind of crucial in the kind of lead up where many of our team were kind of high-handedly turning on team, you know, I met many spiritual people who are like, I'm very spiritual, I'm not involved in politics at all because I'm very spiritual. Again, we go back to King Arthur going, no, there's a different experiment going on now. And see, in 1930s Germany, you know, it's what I wanted to tell Miss Moon Muffin. In 1930s Germany, there was lots of yoga and lots of Hindu stuff and lots of whatever, you know, and channeling and priestess huzahuzas and Saint Germain and, I mean, all this completely not participatory in politics and completely, like, not aware of what was brewing. And because they were not aware of what was brewing, the kind of magical thing was hoovered very effectively by the Nazis. You know, Hitler had a fascination with the occult, and an effective fascination, and it was left by default. Now, what's different now is, again, this wedding of all of our discipline and magic to be engaged, to be aware. It doesn't mean to do anything that anybody tells you. It doesn't mean have to watch news or anything, but it does mean to be dedicated, you know, in a larger calling to collective well-being. And absolutely, you know, when I got in the cab to come here Thursday. Cab driver, and I go, where is your beautiful accent from? You know, Ethiopia. And how are you doing? How are you doing? And I go, you know, as good as any of us could do after the election. And now we're talking, right? It's like 9/11, but there was also, remember, before our grief got kidnapped, there was incredible openness, like, hi, what's up, on the street. And conversation is completely available. You know, and so we were off, right? And he said, my 9-year-old son is terrified. You know, and he's terrified for all of his Hispanic friends. And my wife and my 3 kids, you know, I'm a citizen. I voted for Hillary. I go, who'd you vote for in the primary? He goes, I don't vote in the primary. I just vote for Hillary. And he said, we have Obamacare. What are we going to do? And I go, And I get to the airport, and the man behind the counter, and where's your beautiful accent from? Ethiopia. And how are we doing? And as well as we can during this election. Okay, and off we're. And he goes, my son, who's 12, is, you know, visiting relatives in Ethiopia, and he just called me the other day and said, Daddy, can I come home? And he said, well, I'm married to somebody who works in the State Department. I go, of course you can. But the fear, the children's fear, you know, and when people go, Hillary, I'd rather have my pussy grabbed than World War III, I'm like, children are afraid. You know, they're, you know, it is not our luxury to debate that any further, and we compost anything between us all coming to, you know, but again, this is scary. And some people say, oh, well, good that it's more scary because then there'll be more change. And we go, that's very Trotsky of you, but here we are. And so we think about the NSA whistleblowers at year 40 who change. We think about the change of heart. We bring in, you know, all of our, without hubris, without presumption, without inflation, you know, all of our magic skills. My friend Marcelino in Cuba, when he was growing up in Cuba, had a Santera grandmother, and he always remembers this, and he told me, and I always remember this too. He was just a little boy in her kitchen, and she's making him tea and cookies. And out the window in back of her, he can see a tornado in the field coming this way. And she doesn't break rhythm. She's just tea, cookies, and she just picks up scissors and goes, snip, snip, snip. And he sees the tornado dissipate. And she goes, you want some more cookies, sweetie? We go, we've all got a pair of scissors. Again, you know, the mythological, the backstage metaphors are so eager to participate now. Everything real, everything symbolic. You know, and in Macumba, you know, I knew these people who were working in Brazil for a wealthy, insane person, and they would always put a pair of scissors under her bed to cut her tension, right? See, it's all metaphoric play, you know, our invitation. You know, with myself, I've been working just with this very simple little thing, you know, changing I've got to I get to. Very simple, you know, and I've put it out enough that friends are helping me when I go, oh, I've got to go do this thing, and they're like, get to, and I go, thank you, because it's from a kind of external obligation to, I get to do this thing, you know, and so we get to rescue democracy from mob mind. Isn't that great? It's not, you know, yon ton tethera. And I love with Neptune stationing, you know, the end of one of Mary Oliver's great poems, she's singing in praise of this and that. And she says, I sing in praise to the coyote that came at me with its strong teeth bared, and then at the last moment, smiled. Right? We go, that's one way of thinking what we're headed for, going, oh, no, coyote smile. So, you know, we all have our skills, you know, to, you know, toss lightning into the closed circle of something, just to set the arrow tipped with compassion, with tyranny as its target. These are just, you know, try this at home. These are good things. You know, Breitbart, yes, Brannon. Yeah, all the quirky little things. When I was at CPAC the first time, I was outside and I saw a man having a psychotic breakdown. And it looked like it was kind of fueled by alcohol and amphetamines. And he was yelling at the protesters in the street, going, you're all rapists and whatever. And I go, who's that guy? And they said, that's Andrew Breitbart, the founder of Breitbart News. And I go, whoa. And even his conservatives were like, Andrew. I mean, he was possessed. I want to go for possessed. I think Trump, Brannon, Breitbart. Because then Breitbart went off and died 2 days later. I mean, 2 weeks later, of just like, but also a very important thing about him, people who met him, even on the day he died, said he was kind of a fun guy to have a drink with at the bar. He wasn't really racist. He didn't really believe anything. He was an expedient utilizer of hate of people's hatred. He didn't even hate people. He just could get people's hatred going, and he was hooked on that. He was possessed by the demon, you know. And what's been said about people who know Trump is he's not a racist. He's worse. He's exploiting the hatred and racism, you know. And so I think it's an apt metaphor to go Breitbart. I mean, I saw him, and it's like, if that's not demonic possession, you know, that we got very vulnerable, the amphetamine and the alcohol, you know. And I think that, without getting all paranoid, but I don't think that's possible, to get too paranoid. And as Freud said, no paranoia without real persecution. And a phrase Andy Weil and I coined a long time ago was benign paranoia. You know, what if the universe is a conspiracy for our benefit in some form? You know, but I think, you know, Andrew Breitbart, because I was standing right next to him going, it was like a cold demonic possession going back. I think Brannon, his henchman, his racist henchman, who's been put in charge at the White House, is possessed. I think my feeling about Trump, again, possessed by a cunning demonic retrovirus, because you could see when it would leave him, and he'd be like, and then it would gleam through his eyes again, and then it would leave him. And so we go, see, another avenue of possible play is like to get that demon to leave and invite in another one going, you know, it's part of our fierce blessing. You know, when Wanda Sykes said, you know, when Rush Limbaugh said he wanted Obama to fail, she said, I want Rush Limbaugh's kidneys to fail. We go, good, but not trickster, because we set in motion what we would happily receive ourselves. And so we go, no, we would want Rush Limbaugh's kidneys to work so well that they flush all the poison out of his system and leave him in a pool of befuddled innocence. You know, and in the Terry Pratchett, you know, spirit of animism, you know, we everything's alive. And we go, words, you know, flee from the mouths of those who would, you know, enslave you to lies. You know, oh, microphones. Oh, see, because Mercury retrograde is a time, you know, when people go, I think it's just a time when things, what we think of as things, rebel against the tyranny of what we've made them do, which is why the thing breaks down or the thing whatever. And so this Mercury retrograde, we could really work with it. May anything, you know, employed in something that's not good for everybody. Bless you. that's right. Casting off demons. Sneezing is casting off demons. Thank you for that. You know, may anything, you know, may the microphones, you know, fail. May the strange things, may the microphones be left on, you know, at crucial times. You know, may they flip themselves on, you know, like in Lonesome Roads in A Face in the Crowd. Fantastic movie, 1957. Go see it. There's all these things that are so pertinent to us. You know, may the microphone be on. May Trickster, you know, it shouldn't be, but it was. And, you know, and the thing, and we don't know why this isn't working. We don't know why that, you know, it's again, everything's alive, and people really do, the biggest desire that people have really is that what we hope is true, and the whole realm of magic, that it really is true. The thing I also just want to animate fresh that I do carry with me, but when I was at a water conference, the world's leading engineers, short version. So there was a man, there was Coast Guard and, I mean, important people and all kinds. And so there was a man there with a machine that ran on mostly water and just one tablespoon of gasoline. And it wasn't, there was press and important things, and it wasn't working. And I did not mention that Mercury was retrograde. But the cold fusion physicist guy steps up, you know, and there's cameras and everything, and goes, I think it needs more pressure and all. So I just sensed the moment, as all of us can have the moments of authenticity. And I stepped in, and I put one hand on the machine and one hand on the inventor, and I said, do you vow that this technology will never be used for war? And he said, I do. And the machine went, va-va-boom! Right? And see, all the scientists were so happy that it wasn't just them, that it's not. I mean, people really, they want to. You know, there's no hardest of intellect that doesn't want to know that we're in a magical universe. And they were so delighted and liberated by that. You know, and we can be agents of that as well. We're inviting the Earth to speak strongly in a way of least damage. Lightning striking Trump Tower would be witty, you know, but or something better, but, you know, larger than our thing. You know, so there's all of that. And then, You know, remember also Harry Potter training, really good, you know, ridiculamus, right? That one makes fun of what is scary. That's also part of our plucky dynamic. And the wizards are also doing, you know, avert and go this way and go that way. And we're inviting in, you know, all of our prayers and all of our avert and all of those things. And then just to deconvene, you know, there's many kinds of madness. And I love in Arabic the word majnun. Majnun, you know, some people just say, oh, it just means kind of crazy. But it means crazy for the divine, majnun. You know, and I love, you know, the little teensy bits that, you know, mabsut means content and mazbut means of course. So one can say majnun, mabsut, mazbut. And just, we must just do majnun. Majnun. Mabsut.
Mabsut.
Mazbut.
Mazbut.
Majnun, mabsut, mazbut. Okay, so there we go. So the gods are backstage, you know. And so, you know, in a kind of physical mudra, you know, we feel symbolically and literally, you know, may we all rise to this occasion. May we all rise to this occasion. May we all rise to this occasion, just as a literalized thing. And then for our finale, we want a kind of, you know, trickster aerobic mudras, meaning Neptune says, you know, it's all a mystery. Neptune says, we just want you to wonder. We wonder. And wonder is like we're opening our arms without bonking our neighbor, you know, into a graceful curve, you know, angle yourselves or whatever, you know, turning our bodies into a beseeching chalice of magnetizing inquiry, which then attracts the lightning of revelation and synchronicity. So we're wondering and we're willing, arms straight up, I'm straight up. We're wondering, we're willing, and then we're spiraling forth blessings and well-wishing and good stories out there into the memosphere. There we go, team. That's really good. That's right. And then the last little blessing is a wonderful Amharic word, Aizan. And Aizan is an Amharic word that means support and encouragement to embrace the challenge when embarking on a dangerous journey. So we wish each other Aizan. Aizan.
Aizan.
Ready for action, ready for danger. Thank you, team.